The sign said marriage. So, the truth is that if you look historically, there are no Jewish books about marriage. There's a book called Maseches Kedushin. Maseches Kedushin doesn't talk much about marriage. It says what happens if you marry a half a woman, if you're Mekadesh a woman with something that's Asur B'Hanah. But it doesn't really get to so much day-to-day stuff. Just the original Maseches Kedushin, which, you know, most of the cases in Maseches Kedushin don't really come up day-to-day. He says funny Lashonos. You know, harayat miyuedesli, harayat this, harayat that. There's a lot of gemaras in Kiddushin, but they don't really talk about marriage. And throughout history, we don't really have svarim that talk about marriage. Isn't that interesting? And yet God wants us to be married. The first mitzvah in the Torah is peru ravu. And in order to do peru ravu, you need a wife. So, there are no books. So, what's the book? The book is called Every Single Pasuk in the Torah. Hillel was asked to tell me that the whole Torah on one leg, and he said, "What's hateful unto you, don't do to your friend." He says, "That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing." Now, it's Ben Adam LaChavero is the whole Torah. If you're good at Ben Adam LaChavero, you'll be very good at marriage. You know, maybe some things you'll have to learn a little bit more, but if you're good at Ben Adam LaChavero, you'll be good. And if you're not good at Ben Adam LaChavero, if you don't know how to treat another person, it's going to be a bad life for you, and it's going to be a very bad life for the other person as well, and for your children. So obviously I'm looking around, I only see people, good people here. So I'm talking to the wrong crowd. But it's good for you to know for yourself, so that when your friends get married, you can talk to them. So I'm not really going to talk so much about marriage, but I'm going to talk about Ben Adam LaChavero, but obviously it's going to relate back towards the end. And if you do this, within Ben Adam LaChavero, Ben Adam LaChavero is a big topic. Since the whole Torah is Ben Adam LaChavero. From Bereishis until the last Gemara in Maseches Nida, the whole thing is Ben Adam LaChavero. So, it's a broad spectrum of issues. But today we're going to talk about the most number one basic issue that relates to marriage and also relates to all interpersonal relationships. You know, girls are no different than boys. They just have higher pitched voices and they're more sensitive. So, if you're the higher pitched voice isn't going to make such a big difference unless you're seeing his mirrors with her. But the being more sensitive, whatever I say here about acting towards guys has to be doubly applied to members of the other gender who, I once heard that they did a study in the human brain and they're different, I forgot what they're called. There's lots of things in our body that I forget what they're called. And I'm happy because, but remember, I forget so much Torah, and there's only so much I can remember, so I'd much rather remember my Torah than remember what different parts of the body are called, and I leave that to doctors who have to stay up all night studying and take a lot of tests. I'll leave that to them. But anyway, something in our brain that makes us feel emotion. So there's different like neurotransmitters or something in the brain, and in men, half of them have something that makes us feel emotion. Half of them in our brain, so it probably comes out to about 5 billion. Right? There's lots of, you know, the human body's small, but there's just so much of so much. So, but when women, every single thing in their brain has to do with emotion. So women are very emotional beings. And on the outside, they might not always show it, but they are. And men are also emotional. We have it in half, but we're just not as emotional. But we have to be, the Gemara says you have to be very, very sensitive with your wife, because since they're, towards your wife, since they're very sensitive, if you hurt her feelings, which is pretty easy to do, then it's better to be nice to her. I don't want to speak negatively. It says in this week's parasha that the Vayakum Mishama Anashim, the angels came and they looked at Sdom and Avram accompanied them when they left Sdom. Vayishkipo apenei Sdom v'Avram holichem am l'shalchem. So it says that Avram accompanied them. So we know that Avram's mitzvah was accompanying. Vayita Eshel b'ver sheva. What is Eshel? Achila, Shtia, Levia. And Avram Avinu gave them to eat, he gave them to drink, and he accompanied them. And that's what the Medrash says. Avram holechim am l'shalchem. So Avram Avinu wanted to treat them nicely, so he also accompanied them. He was malava them. The Rambam says that schar halavayas merubah alako. When you accompany somebody, it's a funny mitzvah. You just come in and you have a guest. You have a guest, and you walk the guest out. You accompany the guest on his way. It's a funny, you know, very important. The Rambam says it's merubah alako. It's more important than anything else. Avram Avinu. This is the law of Avram. So, you want to know what a Jew is? Avram. You want to know what Avram is? A malave. Avram Avinu is somebody who accompanies other people. Wow, like if somebody would say to me, you know, tell me something nice about that boy. And I would say, whenever he has a guest, he walks him out. I could think of better. But there are chesed shenasam ba machel of the dorchem and mashkelsim, gave them tea, gave them to drink, umalabelsim. And he would accompany them. And then Chazal say, the Rambam quotes, greater is hachnasas orchem more than accepting the Shechina. How do we see that? That Avraham Avinu is talking to. He's talking to Hashem, and what does he say? And I'm thinking I should just stop right now and just start telling jokes, because I see I'm already boring people. I mean, we just started. It's only been 3 minutes. You've got to give me a chance. Avraham Avinu was speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not your fault I'm boring you. It's obviously my fault. I'm just thinking what I can do to de-bore you. But, you know, I could not talk about something else other than Torah. I'm not an authority on anything other than Torah, and I'm not even an authority on Torah. So what else am I going to talk about? I think the Yankees are playing. Aren't the Yankees playing the Rangers? Are they using hockey sticks or baseball bats? That's why I'm so concerned. I'm so confused. I was playing Madison Square Garden or Yankee Stadium. I'm saying, where's the game? In any event, that's what I said. I don't know. I don't follow baseball. I just, unfortunately, I have emails, so on the top sometimes they try to get me to go to ESPN.com, which I'm not so interested in. Or interested in at all. Ever since the Mets didn't draft me, I'm hurt. I'm not watching. See, people are sensitive. I could throw 100 mile an hour fastball. Just have to take three of my fastballs together. Is there a machine like that? It's your hand to throw three times as fast as you throw. In any event, Hachnas Sorachim is greater than Akbalas Panei Hashchina. Actually, I would be a pitcher. You have to stand in a mound. You have to be higher than everybody else. I don't like that. It's like, Gayol, I'm higher than anybody else. There was once a gadol, and he was a little boy. He was on the seesaw. They were the seesaw. And somebody said, why don't you get on the seesaw and play with your friend? He says, I can't do the seesaw. Why can't you do the seesaw? He said, how can I be up when he's down? I'm up, and he goes down. How can I do that? We'll get to that. I'm going to accompany them. It's greater to receive guests than to receive God. Avraham saw him to God. He says, God, what does it say? He wasn't in Israel yet. So, but you give him this, right? He wasn't in Israel yet? Of course he was in Israel. So you give him this, and then what do? I'll be with you. I'll be with you in a few minutes. Shnia. Like, I love that. I call somebody, they pick up the phone. Hold on. You don't even know who I am yet. Okay, how can you tell me to hold on? You know, 5 minutes later, they're back. Yeah. And then I start talking to them. Yeah. Go over there. I'm like, where should I go? No, I'm not talking to you. So if you're on the phone and you're talking to, well, then why are you talking to somebody else when you... I still don't get it. Okay, when I'm on the phone, I talk to the person I'm on the phone. Usually. It's greater to accompany guests than it is to host guests. So the Rambam, you see from the Rambam, that hosting, that accompanying, is part and parcel, it's not an independent mitzvah, hosting, accompanying. It's part of the mitzvah of Hachnas Orchim. The Rambam talks about Hachnas Orchim, and he says that being malad of the Orchim, accompanying them, is even greater than Hachnasa. So in other words, you're doing Hachnas Orchim, and part of that mitzvah, you want to enhance the mitzvah, you want to do the best part of the mitzvah. The best part of the mitzvah is to accompany the guests. Gemara says in Ksubis, Achenu gomrei chasadim, when people are doing chasadim, they're being menachem avro. Achenu gomrei chasadim, negom chasadim, who are machzikim b'vizah shel Avraham Avinu. So what does the Rashi say? Shagama chesed, shenama v'ita eishel, achila shtia levia. It's eishel is one word. He planted an eishel. Eishel is you give them to eat, you give them to drink, and you walk them out. Ram also says in the Hilchas Evel, it's a mitzvah say, to be a mevaker cholim, to visit the ill, to console mourners, to be mechsamech tekala, ulalav osorachim, and to accompany guests. He doesn't even say achnaz osorachim. In other words, he just gets to the shvitz, he gets to the highest part of the mitzvah, and is the mitzvah to be machnis the orchim, malav the orchim. See, and you see here from all these sources that there's this special union of levaya, of accompanying. What's so great about accompanying? So there are really two types of chesed you can do. There's one type of chesed, somebody walks into your house and he's hungry. And he walks out and he's full. I like the Gemara says, Kalva Savua, when you walk into his house, who is awake this Tisha B'Av? You are awake. Good, Baruch Hashem. Maybe in Chicago they have good air conditioning, it keeps you alive. So the Gemara tells about Kalva Savua. Why is it called Kalva Savua? What did you say?
He's satisfied.
When they walked in, they were hungry as a dog. And when they walked out, they were satisfied. So is that nice that when someone comes into your house, you feed them? I try that sometimes when the boys come over. I try to feed them. They go, no, I can feed myself. I love that. Get it? Feed. My jokes aren't going today. Maybe I should just start doing dances, Rabbi Nachum. I don't know. Na Nachum and Miuman. I love Rabbi Nachman. You give him to eat. That's Gevaldik. However, there's something else that's even greater than giving something to eat. You know, in my house, I have a pet bird. Actually, just yesterday we got pet fish also. And we have fish and bird. Now my son tells me he wants a dog. So I said, why don't we just move out and make it into a zoo? Actually, I met my wife at a zoo. So it's a skula. Want to meet a nice girl? Go to the zoo. Or you'll meet an animal if you don't get a girl. All right, now it's yours. What's your name? Could I have your number? You can give him something to eat, and that satisfied his body. Or you can be malav of the person. You're going to come into the person, and what does that do? What do you show when you walk somebody out? That you care. Who said the word respect? Because of all those 3 a.m. dippings in the Rova Mikvah, that makes you know these answers. Beautiful. Hashem Yimcha. You respect somebody. When you walk somebody out, it's a show of respect. The giving somebody to eat is not nearly as important as showing them respect. Showing them respect is the height of Ben Arma Chavero. Rav Huttner used to say that, the author of the Parchat Yitzchak, he says there's a sugya of an animal's of tzar bali chayim. You're not allowed to cause the animal's tzar. You're not allowed to beat up the animal. You're not allowed to starve the animal. You're also not allowed to cause a person's tzar. However, there's no sugya of covered behemoths. There's no sugya of giving an animal honor. You know, you walk by one of the rova cats, and you say, ah, good morning, Mrs. Katz. How are you feeling today? And that's a show of respect. Ah, and you can, oh, you know, you're walking, and you see the cat coming, so you know, you let the cat walk by. There's no din of respecting cats. There is a din of not hurting animals. But respect only applies to human beings, and there's nothing more important than a human being but respect. As important as respect. Where do you see that? What is the core of the human being? What is what gives the human being, what defines a human being? One word, it starts with an N. Neutrons. Good one. Niagara Falls. Nishama. Ninja Turtles. Nishama. Nishama. Name is shame, which is the shorish of nishama. Name, nishama. What defines a human being is his nishama. How do I know that? Because this piece of flesh worth, you know, $10 in a mom and pop store, what I have going on over here, some bones, some blood, some this and that, which I really appreciate because it's been keeping me going now for the last 51 years. I just had a birthday, but I'm all, the years, they just keep passing. I know they count my Hebrew birthday and English birthday is one each, so I should double my age, or I shouldn't, so I just go somewhere in the middle. In any event, how old are you? How old are you, or how many birthdays have you had? What does it matter how many birthdays have you had? I'm like 78. The neshama is called kavod. Want to say something, DP?
Yeah.
I love that.
If it's neshama, that makes us respect, then why don't you respect non-Jews? Can we have respect non-Jews?
Hopefully we'll get to that. And Jews also, it says, B'tzelem Elokim Baris Adam. Before there was ever a Jew, before the creation of Jews, it already says that every man is in the image of God. So, that's the B'tzelem. In any event, of course you have to respect Jews, non-Jews. I wouldn't try to, you know, set one up with your sister for a shidduch. I don't go that far. There's a shir on marriage. So don't set your sister up with a non-Jew. But, respect, of course. The neshama is kavod. Where do you see that? We say it every day in davening. I'd rather give a shir on davening. Davening is my favorite topic, but they wrote marriage, so talk about marriage. What do we say every day in davening? L'mani yizamecha chavod. In order that my kavod should sing to you. What does it mean my kavod should sing to you? What does it mean? Asher yoshev v'secha. I just like asking people what asher yoshev v'secha. Oh, I never thought of that. What? Asher Yoshev Yisrach, by the way, what it means is we're starting Mincha. Get your sitter. Yeah. Kavod is the neshama. Kavod is neshama. L'mani is America Kavod is my neshama should sing to you. Ura kvodi, ura anevo l'chinor. Ura, arouse my honor. The honor is the neshama. If you look in the Balaam Or at the beginning of Mesechus Brachos, he has his Akdamah to Mesechus Brachos. There he talks about the neshama. And he says that the neshama, where's the neshama taken from? Where's the neshama before it's placed on earth? In Wernick's body. The Kisei HaKavod. What's the Kisei HaKavod? How do you say that in English? Throne of glory. So it's taken from this place of honor. You remember, Wernick? No, you were so busy fighting, you know, trying to get some space in your mother's womb with your other two other fellows over there. So you just, it's so traumatic. You forgot where your neshama came from. Everyone's like boxing each other out. There's no room in here. The neshama is kavod. It comes from the Kisei HaKavod. The Kisei HaKavod, your neshama is called kavod. That's you. A person is kavod. But the Sel Salanter says, you convince a human being that he has no respect at all, no dignity, you killed him. You killed him. Some people say that what drives man in this world is pleasure. And we're all going after pleasure. Everyone's a pleasure seeker. I haven't met a person who's not a pleasure seeker. Just some people seek their pleasure in, you know, Reb Shmuel. You know, Reb Shmuel's Chedushim HaMaseches Bava Basra. And some people seek their pleasure L'Havdil L'Afaf Evdel San Emek. But it's the same thing. It's a person who wants pleasure. And God just tells us, just why don't you get the real pleasure and not some stupid fake pleasure when everyone's faking being somebody they're not. It's a double fake. You're faking being somebody you're not. In any event, the everyone wants pleasure. So that's man. Man is pleasure. We're not covered, we're pleasure. So invite somebody to King David. Invite your friend to the King David. Say, free meal. He comes to the King David. He looks and says, where should I sit? And you say, here's your placemat. Here's your card. You have a little card with his name to make him feel important. And it says his name, Hakelev so-and-so. So, oh, that's so interesting. And then you say, you put him under the table. Say, under the table, you say, this is where you're sitting. Where's my chair? No chair. You have to sit on the floor over here. And where's my food? So you take one of those little doggy bowls that they feed their doggies in, and you put, but King David food, good food. $150 food. Yeah, so you put the food in, some guy named Ahmed who spat in it before, right? So he takes it, he puts the food on in front of the guy, and then you say, eat. He says, I'm going to eat like this? I'm not eating. He said, but the food is good, it's delicious. It's the first course. It's another course, another course, another course, another course. So it costs a lot of, you know, it's a lot of money to get a stomachache. You know what I mean? We're going to feed you. He says, what? I'm not eating like, I want to eat like a human being. He said, no, just enjoy the food. The answer is, you won't enjoy the food. Such a person, because at that very moment he's being disgraced. He's being embarrassed. He's being humiliated. So you get all the pleasure in the world, all the pleasure in the world. Imagine Havdel Fafevdel, Havdel, no, between what and what, right? A person is doing the Maisa that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us to want to do all the time, right? You have this big time, this big Yetzirah. Finally, the moment comes, you know, you're in college, you're in Brandeis, you're in NYU, you made it, Baruch Hashem, she's here, it's great, she's Jewish, everything is kosher, right? You start, you're about to do the Avera, and all of a sudden in walks Rabina, Rab Chizkio, Rab Mementzal, Rab Katz, and Eli Erman. And I look, I go, and I run out, and I'm not interested in the village. So you, how do you feel at that? A moment ago there was so much pleasure. There's still pleasure. They can't touch you. It's New York City. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Bestiality. Anything goes. Anything goes. So, what's the problem? Problem is, you can give somebody all the pleasure in the world, but if he's embarrassed, if you take away his dignity, he can't enjoy himself. Because that's what a person needs more than anything in the world. A person needs a sense of dignity, a sense of self-respect. That's kavod, and that's what defines the human being. So therefore the Rambam tells us, you want to have a guest over? It's very given to eat. He's hungry. He's a human being. Human beings need to eat. So take care of his stomach. Give him to drink. But the most important thing is to treat him with respect. That he needs more than anything else. And if you just throw the food in front of him. I remember I once went somebody somewhere and they said, oh, you want something to drink? And then I'm like, oh, no, not really, you know. Naturally, I always just say no. So then they got me something anyway. And the person putting it down in front of me, like put it down 8 feet away from me on the table. And like didn't look when they put it down and then just walked away. I was like, to this day, this happened a few years ago, but I always remember that moment. Whenever I go back, I was like, is somebody going to give me the water the same way? So I got my cup of water, but I got it in a way that didn't show me respect. You know, the person didn't look at me, they put it far away from me, they just walked away, so did they mean it? Of course not. But that's the need for respect that a person has. And that's why what happens when you're embarrassed, what do people say? I could have died. I wanted to bury myself alive. You know what I mean? When you're so embarrassed, that's the... So what's the embarrassed? So what? So to be embarrassed. To be embarrassed. Walk out. Walk out of the shower in the morning. Isn't it a pain? Every day, again, same thing. Underpants, undershirt. Tzitzis, socks. Shirt, buttoning the shirt. Pants, zip. Da, 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 da. Just walk out of the shower and come to the base matters. You'll save time. You'll save yourself some effort, and that's it. What's the answer? The answer is, if you do, you're definitely going to be locked up, and they're probably going to lock me up also because you're going to tell on me. So don't do that. But it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I once had a maisa where I was davening, and I said, Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Pekeach Ivrim. I can see. I can see. And then I said, I'm happy I can see. Being blind stinks. And then I said, Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, Malbish HaRubim. I have clothing. I thought to myself, how can you compare the ability to see with an old black suit that's 150 years old that I bought at Sims because I wanted to support you guys afterwards? You go to side school, Sims a business. Yes, I bought at Sims because also they said an educated consumer is our best customer. That's their motto. So I want to feel like I'm educated. In any event, so I bought this 100 years ago. It's wearing out. It's ripped on the bottom. How can I compare this ripped suit to... A little bit ripped. I hope nobody notices. If somebody notices, I'm not allowed to wear it anymore. How can I compare it to... Being able to see. Being able to see is like I use that. That's the most important thing. I can see. I can read. I can look at where I'm going. And clothing, like how can I compare the two? Anyway, I think it was that night I had a dream. And I was walking down the street. And there I was wearing the same exact outfit I was wearing on the day I was born. I was humiliated. I was mamish humiliated. And then I woke up. I'm like, ah, clothing. It gives me dignity. It gives me dignity, clothing. I cover myself up, and I also dress in a way that I want to show that I have dignity. I don't walk around, I don't wear shorts, I don't wear t-shirts, I don't wear my shirt out of my pants. Occasionally, I'm very, very skinny, and it's only so tight I can make the belt, so sometimes the shirt falls out. But I try to dress in a dignified way, because if I don't, then I'm taking away what defines me as a human being, which is my cover. It's a lack of respect. So if you're wearing nothing, that's the least respect. And if you're shrumpy, so then it's not completely disrespecting yourself, but it's not as respectful as somebody, you know, you don't see a chassan at his wedding, and you know, he comes to his wedding, and you know, he's wearing a t-shirt, the Grateful Dead. Yes, and he has ripped jeans, you know, he had to spend extra money, so it was already ripped, it came pre-ripped, instead of him having to go home and ripping it, and, you know, and then they're all worn out, yeah, you know, he's wearing this, and he's wearing shoes, you know, he's wearing cracks without socks, and he's just walking, you know, the schlumpy look. So you don't see the chassan walking around like that, because he's the man of honor. So he's always wearing, you know, a special outfit, and he's wearing a white tie, and he's wearing a tuxedo or a tuxedo pants or something, because that's what gives him the most dignity. It says about the big day kahuna. I'm making it up. It says about the big day kahuna. What were they given to the kohanim for, these special clothing? Who remembers the pasuk? L'chavod u'l'tifaret. It's for honor and for glory. And it's even a kohen gadol, who's a very ruchni person, you think, ah, who cares what you're wearing? Do the avot. No, no, no. And it says, if you're not wearing the begadim, what's the halacha kohanim? Shlomo HaKohen. What happens? You're not wearing your big day kahuna. You try to do avot in the base of mikdash. What happens? We start pelting you with stones. We start pelting you. You know how to do that. If you're not doing, you're not wearing the clothing. You're not, because the Kohen is the most honored person in Klal Yisrael, and he has to dress accordingly. So then I realized when I had that dream, I'm like, oh, I really do need my clothing. Now I can appreciate it. Okay. So the question is, how far into Kavod should we go? So it says here, you're called to Maharal. Maharal says, it says in the Gemara that when you accompany somebody, so there's Shmira, they're being guarded. It says the Maharal. Who are covered? Chosen al Shane Dochano. So Rak Malav Moshe. When you show somebody covered and you don't push him away and you accompany him, so that's Shmira. And when you give him covered to this person, I'm just translating, who is B'Tselem Elokim, he has Shmira. Because when a person is B'Tselem Elokim, so then it says, when the animals, when you're acting like you're supposed to, the animals are going to be afraid of you. So by accompanying him and showing him honor and accentuating his B'Tselem Elokim, his godly image, nobody can start up with him. All the bad forces can't touch him. And then when you don't, it says in the Gemara, it's like you're Shofech Damim. Because you're Mevazis Tselem. Somebody's created an image of God. You don't accompany him. Meaning you don't show him any respect. And I feel it, by the way. I grew up very lucky. I have a mother. Hashem, I may have asked you. So my mother, no matter what, she would always walk me to the door. No matter what, she would always walk me to the door. I'm going somewhere, and I always felt good. And then we had an elevator, so I'd wait for the elevator to come, and she'd always wait for me until I got in the elevator. And And that was her custom. And now, whenever somebody's in my house and I don't walk them out, I always feel like my kids, whatever, you know, it's hard. They're coming in, they're coming out. I'm busy doing something to get up, to go. But I feel like it's a lack of respect. Like, they just go? You ever go to somebody's house and you just sort of leave and nobody walks you to the door? You're like, am I doing the right thing? Should I close the door? But when they walk you out, it makes you feel like, I'm an important person. They walk you out. Since they walk you a little bit outside, it makes you feel. And I also know that. Because when I have guests, I walk them out. And I always see, I can tell by myself, intuitively, I don't think about it in advance usually, but how much I respect them by how far I walk them. Sometimes I walk people to the door. Sometimes I walk them out to the courtyard of my building. Sometimes I walk them downstairs. Sometimes I walk them to Shai Yafo. And then there are a few people I really, 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 really like. I walk them all the way home. All the way home. And then I walk back. Doesn't happen so often. And also, usually it's Shabbos, whatever, I have a little bit more time. But I do without thinking. But I know naturally that if I want to honor this person, this is the way I show them honor. So that's the Levaya. And that's also why it says about Paro. It says that Paro accompanied the Jewish people when they left. And Chazal tell us that there are really two psukim. There's a pasuk that says not to despise a Mitzri. Don't despise a Mitzri. Why? In other words, after three generations, a Mitzri is allowed to marry into the Jewish people. After three generations, an Egyptian is allowed to marry. Why don't you despise them? So Rashi says, because when you came down to Egypt, they hosted you. That's why you shouldn't despise them. On the other hand, it says in Chazal, it gives a different reason. And the reason, the schar of accompanying the Jewish people, because of that, you're now allowed to despise an Egyptian. So which one is it? Is it what the pasuk says? That Kigera Yisabar So, that when you were in trouble and you went down to Egypt, they hosted you, with Yaakov and his sons? Or is it because Paro accompanied you? So what's the answer? So the answer is, that where does it start? It starts with the Achnasas Orachim, that they accepted you into their country. And where does it end? What's the Makkah B'Patish? Vahi B'Shalach Paro Esa'am. That B'Shalach is Levaya. That he accompanied us. So that accompaniment, that show of respect, that means that we're not supposed to despise them. As opposed to the Amon and Moab, which did just the opposite. They're never allowed to come into Klal Yisrael. Because they're the exact opposite. They're the exact opposite of Chesed and the exact opposite of Kavod. And they try to curse you, and they didn't bring you bread and water, even though you didn't need bread and water, the Mepharshim say. When you left Egypt, you didn't need bread and water. So why does it say that they're punished, they're never allowed to enter Klal Yisrael because they didn't give you bread and water? The answer is that even though you didn't need it, because you had the money, you had the Be'er, but it's a show of respect. That even if somebody has food, you're not poor when somebody walks into my house. It's not that he can't afford food, he can't go to the Makolet up the block, but it's a show of respect that I want to show, I respect you, so I'm giving you something. That's a matter of fulfilling somebody's, satiating someone's hunger. It's a show of, I think you're an important person, so I'm going to serve you. And not just feed you. I'm going to serve you. You bring the person the plate. I remember I once went to somebody's house for Shabbos when I was a student many years ago. And it makes me laugh to this day. Somebody, the woman, we were sitting at the table. So the mother said, I thought it was funny. You guys aren't going to laugh, and I'm going to feel stupid, but it's okay. It's good. She said to one of the boys, you want soup? So the guy said, yeah. She said, okay, go and bring it in. I was like, ooh, yeah, usually you want soup means I'll bring you some soup. And then you're a nice boy, you offer, no, can I help you? She's like, you want soup? Go get it. Right? So, which is fine. You know, she served soup. She made the soup. She didn't ask us to make the soup, which is fine. But you would expect, you know, there's more of a show of respect, right? When someone comes to your house, yeah, you're home in America, and, Rabbi David Abuchatzera, Rapindo, needs a place to stay, so he stays with you. You know, you're not going to send him into the kitchen. Right? That's not your way of showing him respect. So the way of showing respect is to bring it to serve it. So that's the yisod of kavod. That's why Amon and Moab aren't allowed to come. They didn't bring us bread and water to show us, hey, you guys are important people. We're going to feed you, even though we know you have. We're going to feed you. Whereas in Mitzrayim, vayhi b'shalach, not only did they bring us in, but also Paro accompanied us out, which shows that a person is important. So there are really two inyanim. There's one inyan of respecting other people. And I think this is one of the biggest problems in our society. You know, people don't know what it means. People don't even know. I see it all the time, every day. All the time, every day. I see just a lack of respect in so many different ways that people aren't even thinking. Because people don't know that the number one quality that a person has to have is this quality of kavod, to know how to give other people respect. That's step number one. You know, You're talking to somebody. Imagine you're in a meeting. You're in a meeting with a tzaddik. You're in a meeting with Rabbi David Abuchatzera. And he's sitting there, and all of a sudden your phone rings. Your phone rings. You say, Slicha Arav. Slicha Arav. And you start talking. Yeah, it's really, really hot today. Yeah. Later on. Now I'm going to be there. And you start. Would anybody do that? Is there a guy in the room who would do that? Why? You have too much respect. I know. I'm close to a Hasidish Rebbe, a little bit. And he once was telling a story that he was in the room. You make an appointment to see him. People call him from all over the world. People wait weeks to be able to come to see him. And one time a guy's in there and he gets a call. And he just sits there on the phone and he starts to talk. And he's talking. He's sitting. You can't believe it. So you're talking to your friend and your phone rings. So what's the best way of not respecting him? The best. Right at that moment. You can spit him in the face, but you wouldn't do that. So what's the easiest way not to show him a lack of respect? You just pick up the phone. Right in the middle of the sentence. It happens. And a person says, nah, it doesn't bother me. It might not bother you, but it bothers me. It bothers me all the time. And I don't think I'm different than anybody else. So I assume it bothers other people also. Because nobody likes to be in the middle of a conversation with somebody. And all of a sudden they're interrupted. And that's it. In mid-sense, I know. I see the movement into the pocket. And I see he takes it out. Now sometimes he doesn't even answer. Sometimes he sees who it is and this and that. It's a lack of respect. When you're talking to somebody, what's the best way to respect them? The best way to respect a person when you're talking to them. What do? Excuse me? Listen, man. I can't hear what you're saying. Listen. How do you listen? How do you listen to somebody? I'll tell you how some people listen. They go like this. Look at me. Yeah. To listen means to look somebody else square in the eye and absorb every word the person is saying without thinking what you're going to answer. We're always so busy. What's a conversation? Much communication. Waiting for the other guy to finish so I can say what I want to say. A lot of chavrusas also. When is he going to already finish so I can say what I want to say? So communication, proper Jewish, holy communication, is you look at somebody and you're 100% completely, you're hanging on every word they say. Just like a girl, when you really like a girl, and you couldn't care less. I mean, who cares about her dress, and where she went shopping, and where she went, and who her friend is, and this and that? What do you care about? You want to get it. Anyone ever had that experience in this room? That you really, really wanted to get a girl, and you listen, because you knew that was what was going to get her to like you. And you knew that if you didn't listen, then she wasn't going to like you as much. So you listen. Is that the right thing to do? Of course it's the right thing, and we all know it's the right thing to do. But if you're not trying to get the girl, so then people feel free. They look here, they look there, they look very rare. As a matter of fact, sometimes a boy says, I want to talk to you. So, you know, I've been working on this meet a little bit. If I talk about it, I want to do it myself. I say, okay. So I sit down and I stare them square in the eye. And I make eye contact and I put my head forward and then I start listening. I'm hanging on every word they're saying and I'm trying to block out everything else in the world. My phone's not going to go off in my pocket. Why not? How do I know my phone's not going to go off? Because I don't have a phone, because I don't think it's respectful to have it. Okay, so, or it's off. You would say, it's off. You guys should have a phone, because you need a phone. You're not like me. You have friends. Yeah, so you turn your phone is off. It's off. Like I ever told you about the wedding I was at, and the rabbi said to the chassan, okay, you know, now put the ring on her finger and say, Harei at Mekudeshes. And also he's like, Harei at me. Yeah. Yeah, how you doing, Dovi? Yeah, no, I'm about to be Makadesh Rachel. So I'll... Never happened. Now, I was never at such a wedding. He's not answering the phone in the middle of his chuppah. His phone is off. And his phone goes on, and his phone rings. He's going to be terribly embarrassed. He's going to quickly turn it off. He's not interested. This is a very special moment. She doesn't want to feel that he's busy with other conversations at this time. This is an important moment. So, I stare the person in the eye, and I start to listen. And you know what happens almost every time? I'll tell you something very interesting. The person starts to giggle nervously. Do you know why? Because people aren't used to that. People aren't used to getting anyone's undivided attention. Nobody in this generation gets anybody's undivided attention. There's too much going on. You're in the car and you're driving and you're looking out and he's going there and then the person has a BlackBerry and then you have four emails and you have to think and it's multitasking. You're doing 80,000 things at one time just to be able to focus on another person. It's not done. It's not, I don't know. When I've spoken to a lot of people in the world. A lot of people. I know two people in the world that I speak to, that I've spoken to, who do that. And I'm talking about now 4 decades of talking to people, maybe there are more. But from what I can think of in my mind, I know two people who I speak to them, and I'm the only person in the world. One is Rav Katz, years ago, and I haven't spoken to him in a long, long time. But when I was first, you know, when I was younger, and I was in the Kol, I was in the Yeshiva Kotel Kol for a month. I never last long anywhere. Yeah, I'm hard to say it. But I was in the Kol a little bit, and I went to speak to Rav Katz before I was married, and he was giving me a lot of advice, and this and that, and he helped me out a lot. He's a very busy person. He has to finish all of Shisha Siddur Mishnah every day. You know what I mean? He's got people coming to see him, and he gives shiurim, and he's an older man, and he has 13 children, 755 grandchildren. So he's got a lot of stuff going on. But you sit and you talk to him, and he's just, nothing else exists in the world. Nothing else, just you. It was nifla. It was mamish nifla. It was just to be able to sit there. It's like being in the presence of God. You know that he's listening to every word you're saying, and he's not somewhere else. The other person is, I go to my Rebbe, who has also people waiting to see him all day and all night, and he get phone calls nonstop. But I'm in the room and I'm talking to him, and nothing else is going on. For those 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 45 minutes, however long I'm zocheh to be in there, nothing else in the world exists. So I talk about the two most busy people in the world, and I think, how interested can they be in what I have to say? What am I telling? I'm telling them a chiddush in the Gemara that they never heard before. I'm telling them the secret of existence. No, I'm telling them about a personal problem I have, something I'm dealing with, or whatever it is. That's pretty boring sometimes. It's not so, I don't have any big averos or anything that's so interesting to tell about. You know, it's like, oh wow, this is really, I'm a boring guy with a pretty boring life, and then I have some boring problems. I mean, to me they're not boring, but to somebody else listening to them they're boring. Maybe. But no. You're listening, and you're listening to every word. I remember when I was a kid, my parents sent me to therapy. My parents sent me. Because they thought I wasn't normal. And then over the years, I think I confirmed it. In any event, so they send me. I remember going to the psychologist. I remember one guy sitting there. His eyes are closing as I'm talking. He's falling asleep. Saying, wow, this is really great. You know, when can I pay you? That'll wake you up. Yeah. So, and another guy's answering the phone. Right in the middle. He's in the middle of talking. Phone. He has to answer the phone. So he said, I have to make a living. So I have to answer the phone. So in other words, you're not really with me. So that's what it means. That's what it means. If you're answering the phone, it means you're not really with me, and especially today, like I always say, that you're not really with anybody. Because anytime you have a device with you that's on, you know that at any moment somebody could be calling you, so you have at some subconscious level, you're not really here. And it's so interesting. There's some mystery. Who's calling me? Like, but you're not there with that person. To be there with that person means right now nothing, it doesn't matter. You could be at lunch, and there's a million things going on at lunch. But right now, somebody's talking to you. So you just sit, and you give them that respect, and the reason people giggle nervously is because they're not used to that. They're not used to somebody looking at them when they're talking. They're not used to them hanging on every word. And they're not used to them after, oh, so what you're saying is like this, instead of the person, as many people do, then they bring the conversation to themselves. So yeah, Yes, they once, and Dale Carnegie, in his How to Win Friends and Influence People, so he said that, they once taped people talking on the phone, and the most used word in the English language is, right, what?
Capital I.
You know, I had this thing, like for Anova, I was thinking that when a person writes I, they should write a lowercase I, even though it's incorrect grammatically. I was thinking, like, that makes you humble. Like, I'm not a capital, I'm just a lowercase. That's good for humility. So that's one aspect of kavod. One aspect of kavod is you're talking to somebody, listen to them. There's another thing. I walk around the world and I think of all these things that when I think about them, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. There's a shear going on. Like right now, this has happened to me 1,000 times. There's a shear. How many people are here in this room? So this is being recorded. So we'll say 15,000 people. Okay? There are 15,000 people right here with me in Teddy Kolek Stadium. Yes. And apparently we're talking about Torah. We're talking about something. Whatever it is, we're having a meeting. Okay, it's Torah, you have to have more respect for the Torah. Even if it's not Torah, we're having a meeting. And what does the person do? He walks into the room. What happens at the moment he walks into the room? 30,000 eyes follow him every step of the way. Now there's nothing interesting, you know what I mean? He's not wearing a clown suit, but it doesn't matter. Any distraction is going to take people off. That's been my experience. It could be anything. It could be, you know, a piece of paper falls, everybody's going to watch the fall of the paper. And they're going to look at the paper on the floor. It could be, you know what I mean? Could be somebody's fixing something in the corner. He's adjusting the sound system. If there's a microphone, everybody's looking at him. But I'm going to say everybody. I mean everybody. I'm in the Beis Medrash. somebody's in the corner over there, I don't know what they have now, but I remember in previous years, in the corner there was this sound system, and the guy's fixing it, right? And every single eye is on that person. So what are you doing? Why does the guy walk into the room? Why does he walk into the room? He needs a book. He needs a book. So in other words, you're going to disturb an entire shir because you need something. You need something. Can you imagine a group of people sleeping? Right? You have a whole big room of God sleeping guys. And all of a sudden you walk in, you turn on the light, and you start playing music. Everyone would agree. That's a gross lack of respect. Like, how can you do that? And everybody knows that's wrong. Why? Because you're disrespecting something. This guy is sleeping, and you're making the whole group is sleeping, you're making noise. So you have a room, and there's a shir going. I used to do it myself. Until I said, how can I do this? I'm disrupting the shir. That shows a lack of respect for the person giving the shir, and it also shows a lack of respect for people listening. Because you're saying, now I'm going to stop what everybody here is doing, because I need my book. If it was for me, I'd rather not learn. I'd rather to show somebody else disrespect. I was telling my son recently, he was telling me that in his yeshiva, not everybody, you know, has such great midos. I said, I want you to remember one thing. We spoke about this. I don't think he was here Thursday night, a few weeks ago, we spoke about it. But a person who doesn't have good midos is a behemah. So it's a chiddush. Look at this boy with bad midos and say, imagine that. He knows Gemara Baal Peh and he's a behemah. A behemah who knows Gemara Baal Peh. That's what it is. You have a lack of respect. So it's like, that's why incidentally the Sfarim say that you're allowed to, that Hashem permitted us to eat meat after the Mavul. Before the Mavul, you weren't allowed to eat meat. After the Mavul, suddenly you're allowed to eat meat. Why? Because people are acting like animals. We're on the same level as animals. I have no respect for you, you have no respect for me, I steal from you, you steal from me. No respect. So if you have no respect, you're on the same level as an animal. Hashem says, no, no, no. You take the animal, you shech the animal, and then you'll know you're on a higher level than the animal. Hopefully you won't act like an animal. Ideally we shouldn't eat meat. How can you take a living being and cut it for dinner? Kill it for dinner? For dinner. This chicken, that guy sacrificed his life for an ideal. He's sacrificing his life for your dinner. I personally am very uncomfortable with the whole notion of eating meat. Very uncomfortable. Very. And I was a vegetarian for a while. How can I kill an animal? Kill a living being? Slit his throat for dinner? So my answer is I don't slit his throat. The shochet does. I just get in a plastic bag. But the question is, how can I eat that food? So the answer is I eat it because the Torah says you're allowed to eat it. But the Torah says you're allowed to eat it as a b'dieved. So that we know that we're higher than animals. So I eat it. And I would be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it also. Well, you're not an animal. You're a human being. So you have to know that by eating animals. But that's this whole... So in life, when you walk around, you can think to yourselves, I'm not any smarter than you, I'm probably less smarter than most of you, or if not all of you, less smart. But think of ways in life you can just show people respect. The Chazon Ish, when somebody would walk into the room, Yeshiva Bacha, he would stand up. He would stand up. Why? What happens when you're standing up? What are you showing? You're showing respect. There's so many ways to show somebody respect. And there's so many ways to show somebody disrespect. Somebody calls you, and they leave a message on your phone. And what do you say on your phone? I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Yes? So 2.5 weeks, you remember to call the person back. What does that show? It shows you don't respect them. Because let's say, I would call, and I'd... What's it called, my voice? I would... Change my voice, or, you know, put on a fake voice. I can't... Is what I'm thinking of? Yeah, and I get on the phone, and I say, I have some good news for you. We had a competition for all the yeshiva boys in Israel. Yes, we put all their names in a lottery, and we said, the one whose name we pick out, you know, gets a prize of $15,000 to further his Jewish education, and you won. So please call me back when you get a chance. How long does it take you to make that phone call? As long as it takes you to dial. That's how long it takes you. You don't even have to dial, just press. I assume the number's on your phone, right? You can just press and call the guy back. I think, I don't know. Whenever I have a phone, I don't know. I'm always asking people what to do. The green, they say to me. Press green, that means send. Okay. I'm glad I'm learning. So, sometimes when the light turns green, when I want to cross the street, I start to talk. Like, no, when the light turns green, you cross the street. When the phone, the green button. So, you go right away! Right away! And then you got a call from Rav Neventhal. I want to speak to you about something. You wait a week to call him? People do it all the time. People do it. I recently needed a very important piece of information from a rabbi in America. So I send him an email. So it could be some people don't even check their email. It could be. The answer should have taken him exactly 3.5 seconds to write, and he was the person I needed the information from. And it took 3 days. I was wondering to myself, you can't give me 10 seconds? I was trying to be done. and he doesn't look. He doesn't look, which is also a big rabbi, so if you have it, some stuff that people send you, so maybe you should look because then people... I don't know. I don't like being judgmental. I have to be judgmental of others and I have to be judgmental of myself. And I'll be so busy being judgmental of myself, I'm not going to have time to get to anybody else because I have so many things to judge. But in general, if you already have email, you don't have to have email. You don't have to have. But if you have it, and somebody wants to know information, somebody needs something from you, so you answer them right away instead of waiting 3 years. That's a show of respect. And answering messages is a show of respect when people leave messages. And there are 150 ways to show people respect. 150. Before I gave the example of waking up a whole room full of people. People tell me in the dorms people wake each other up. It's a lack of respect. The other aspect, the other element, is acting in a way that commands respect. One way is showing respect to others. Very important. And also, you have to act in a way that people say, oh, that's a mechubadik person. And that means the way you dress. And that means the way you talk. And that means who your friends are. And that means where you're hanging out. I said, somewhere that some of these guys hang out. I'd rather die. I'd rather die than be in some of these places. Why? Because it would put me on the level of an animal. Because I'm in a place where human beings are living like animals, and they're just out for their pleasure, and it would be just such a yerida. You have a boy, he learns Gemara, and he's in Rav Eisenstein's shir, and he's sitting there, and Rav Eisenstein's using all these Yiddish words that he doesn't understand. And then he says, oh, and according to the Rashba, it would come out like this. And according to Tosfos, it would come out like that. And then you're doing your Avodas HaNefesh. And then you're learning your Musar. And then you're doing it. And then you're learning your Nefesh HaChaim. And then you have Tanya. And then you go to Rabbi Yoel's Chug, and he starts telling you that the Be'er Mayim Chaim says this, and Rabbi Tzedek HaKohen says that, and the Divrei Chaim. You have all these Torahs. And then this same person finds himself in a place where people, this is all matters of the spirit that you're involved in. And then you go to a place where people are completely involved in matters of the body. Matters of the body, matters of pleasure. It's the lowest. You go to a movie, and then they have some joke about passing gas, or, other, just so vulgar. So vulgar. American entertainment, it's just vulgar. It's vulgar. You can't. You can't watch. I'm talking about the 1980s. I always assume things are getting better, because every year there's more. There's another Yom Kippur, and another Yom Kippur, and Tshuva, and Elul. So the world is getting... In the 1980s, every show was vulgar. Every show there's jokes about sex, and there's jokes about the bodily organs and relieving yourself and just it's sickening. It's just sickening. So you're taking yourself, I'm a chubadik person, and then you're lowering yourself the lowest level that you can reach. And that's all the comedy clubs and the bars. It's the first thing David HaMelech says to you, the first thing at the Hillel, he says, Moshev Leitzim lo yashav. Don't sit in a Moshev Leitzim. It's beneath your dignity. You imagine it's Saturday night, you're sitting in a smoky bar, and you're looking around, and you're boogieing with these girls, and all of a sudden you see a familiar-looking hat. A familiar-looking hat! And a tie, and a suit, and a gartel, and you see, oh, Pepe! Wow! And then you see me with, I'm dancing with this girl, and with that girl, and... Vermin, does your wife know you're here? Wouldn't that shock you? Wouldn't that even bother you? Wouldn't it bother you? Because it's somebody you respect to a certain extent. I know you respect me to a certain extent because you're here. I know a lot of people who aren't here. That I've gone through the list of all the people who aren't here. That keep me busy the last 45 minutes. But you came, so you have enough respect to come and hear me speak. So there is respect involved. Yes? So, and I try to act in a way that commands respect. And then you see me there, like, oh yeah. I can't believe it. It's like the feeling a person has. Like in the newspaper, they find this big rabbi and he did these terrible things. And, oh, how can that be? And you begin to lose your faith in Judaism and people and rabbis. It's hurtful. So you're no less. And yet people go. They go because they don't have enough. They don't think, I'm too chashuv for this place. I'm too important to be in such a place, to be talking to such a person, to be reading such a magazine. I'm sitting and reading. Can you imagine? You're sitting on the 20 bus. I'm always on the 20 bus, unfortunately. Too often. You're on the bus, and all of a sudden you see me, and I'm, leafing through my Sports Illustrated. You say, oh, what issue is that? I say, it's the swimsuit issue. I'm really into swimming. Isn't that a little bit beneath my dignity to be reading that? I think it's beneath your dignity also. And every magazine is a swimsuit issue. The question is just how much swimsuit there is, usually a minimum. Yes? And it's, how many pictures there? But it's all the same. It's all the same. Just don't lower yourself. Don't lower yourself to that garbage. So now we have 5 minutes left. And that's really what's getting... You want to make your marriage work? There has to be two things. You have to give your wife so much respect. Respect means she walks in the room, you stop what you're doing. How are you? You smile, you take an interest. It's so easy. Everybody knows, like, you did it when you were dating. Everybody's going to do it right now. It's easy to talk, because, you know, when you're dating, and you're young, so, of course, you imagine that you're going to really like the girl, and it's going to be fun. I have one guarantee I'm going to make everybody in this room. She is going to get boring. It doesn't matter who you marry. Everybody gets boring after a while. It's going to be boring. And she's going to walk into the room, and it's just not going to be so exciting. She's walking into the room 5,000 times. Not only that, you're also going to find out that there's some things about her you don't even like so much. So she walks in the room, and you ignore her. So that's a lack of a person has to train himself. Every time she walks into the room, just go, hi, how are you? A smile is respect. You stand up, can I get you something? I once read in a marriage book, a guy said that he was in someone's house, 70-year-old guy, his wife walks into the room, he says, oh, how are you? Can I get you a cup of tea? He runs into the kitchen, he makes her a cup of tea, and he serves her. He says, how beautiful this old elderly couple. He treats her with such respect. He wants to get her a cup of tea. He serves her. So he came home, this guy, and he tells his mother, you wouldn't believe what I saw today. I went over to so-and-so's house, and he was there with his wife and the way he treated her. And his mother said, they were just married a month ago. The second marriage. He said it was the worst day of his life. And he finally thought, he met that couple who's still showing each other respect after all these years, and then he realized it was after a month. So what's going to be in a year from now, or in 2 years from now, or in 5 years from now? And that's what happens. It happens, so yeah. You know, when you're dating, you know, you want to show the person, you want to buy them gifts, and you call in the middle of the day, and you text them, and you're trying to get them. But after a while, everyone here probably, I'm hoping, grew up in a home where there was a mother and a father, at least for a certain period of time. So, you see, your father doesn't always necessarily treat your mother with like 100% respect. Like a great guest just walked in the house. Ah! And for the wife, she has to treat her husband with respect. That's what keeps a marriage together. Just recently I was involved with a certain couple, whatever, they completely disrespected each other. From the get-go. Now it's, you know, years later and many kids later, and they're in very, very, very bad straits. Because you're going on years and years and years of lack of respect. So that is the focus. I once saw a definition of kavod. It's opening up your heart and making a place for somebody else in your own heart. That this person, this person's honor is as dear to you as your own honor. And you're always trying, even more dear than your own honor. It says, Mechaya. It says, Orba Kagufa, O Mechabda, Yosemi Gufa. You just keep that. It's a one line in Chazal. All a person has to do is keep it, and they're happy forever. You love her as much as yourself, and you honor her even more than you honor yourself, and it's not an easy thing to do. Because you don't always think she's so worthy of honor. You know, when you get to know somebody, you begin to see all their faults. What are you going to do? You're going to honor her. And she walks into the room, wow, like, you know, she knows all Shas Bal Peh. You know, she makes a good chicken soup. You know what I mean? She's nice. She's good looking. But, like, all this respect I'm giving her. So when you're young, you know, and the hormones are active, so you want to get the girl, and you want to get married, you want to have a family, and all that stuff is nice. But what about a year later, and 2 years later, and you see sometimes she can be childish, and sometimes she can do the stupidest things, and you know, and sometimes she can be clingy, and she gets offended so easily, and you know all of her faults. All of her faults, you know. And to still have respect for somebody after all of their faults is very simple. It's very simple. But she still has a Tzelem Elokim. Every person you meet has a Tzelem Elokim, it doesn't matter who. And your wife's Tzelem, that has to be the focus of your life. The focus of your life is to give your wife kavod. And then when you start having children, to give your children kavod. They're talking about keep it avayim. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. But there's also a mitzvah to mechabed your children. Not like a parent, but to show your children respect. To be sensitive to their needs and then what embarrasses them, what doesn't embarrass them. So that's kavod. Now, you have to show your spouse respect, but you also have to live in a way that commands respect. So when you get married and you're sleeping till 11, yeah, on a Sunday morning, you say, oh, I'll sleep in today. She doesn't respect you because you're a bum. By the way, no women sleep till 11. My Rebbe said that he's been dealing with couples now for about 30 years. And he's never met a woman who just stayed around in bed and slept all day and hung out and did nothing. Met many, many men like that, but never, not a woman yet. It's a woman, there's something in their brain, I don't know what, it makes them get out of bed in the morning and go do the dishes and sweep and clean. I always wonder, like, when there's food on the table, and I have in my house one woman, two women, and four men. And the four men, in order for us to take off the table, it has to be like a learned, prepared behavior. Like, there has to be a woman saying, clear off the table. And then that doesn't register because, you know, we're too busy thinking about what we want to eat next. And then if it's said three or four or five times, Then, in order that we should be able to get more food and not, you know, not to have too much, you know, quarreling in the house, so we'll take off the table. Whereas for a girl, it's like instinctive. See, there's a dirty plate on the table, so you go and you take it off. And then you go into the kitchen and you see what else you can bring in. And then, like, the worst time is when there's nothing to bring in from the kitchen to the dining room, and there's nothing to take from the dining room to the kitchen. What are you going to do now? The dishes! So all of a sudden, they're sitting there bringing them. And women don't understand a guy, how he's not, doesn't know on his own, like, there are dirty dishes in the sink. Why don't you do them? What's the answer? The answer is pashut. Because experientially, we know that whenever there are dirty dishes in the sink, they're going to get done. Now, how we believe in God, it could be a miracle. But eventually, they end up cleaning the... So we don't even fear anything to do them. We don't even think to do them. So just some... There's certain things, the way a woman works, that she knows. She knows life is working. She gets pregnant, and she has babies, and she has to take care of the baby, and she has to change the diaper, and she has laundry to do. So, but a man, it just, it doesn't occur to us. And then if it does occur to us, so then we have to think, should we do it? Or shouldn't we do it? And a lot of times the answer is, like I said, if it's eventually going to get done anyway, why should I be the one to do it, right? So then a lot of times we don't. And some people do, but they do it because it, but it has to be something conscious, something. With a woman, I said it's almost reflexive. So you have to act in, if she sees you're a sleepy guy, she loses respect for you. Now it depends what type of, what this woman values. If this woman values that you marry, she values money. Yes, unfortunately there's some girls like, that's on the top of their list. If you're not making money, if you're not going to work, she's not going to respect you. So if you know that you're married to a woman, this is what she values, so you show her, I'm a guy who goes to get him, I'm a guy who try to get the best job, and I go to work every day. But if she sees that you don't care about money, so if my wife sees that I don't care about money, she doesn't lose respect for me, because she knows that I think other things are a lot more important than money. So when it comes to money, I'm very, you know, I don't really remember, and I don't think, and I don't cash the check, and I just, some things don't, whatever, it's not because I'm such a great person, it's just because that gives me pleasure. I go for what gives me pleasure, and the money stuff doesn't, but if you know money's important, so you go and you get a good job. And let's say, hopefully you'll marry a girl who learning is important too. So if she sees you as a husband who learns, so then she'll respect you. If she sees you as a husband who wastes his time, then she's going to lose respect. If she sees you come home every day, and you're sitting on the couch, and you read the newspaper, and you surf the net, she's going to think she's married to a bum. She's going to lose respect for you. And you know what happens when your wife loses respect for you? Your life ends. Marriage, it's over. And it could be you'll be living together, but your marriage is over. Because she doesn't have respect for you, and she's going to show you how much she doesn't have respect for you. And then how are you going to feel when a person treats you like garbage? How are you going to feel? You're going to want to give it right back. You're going to give it right back. So you'll get on other things. And then and that's the end of it. But the kavod, you show her a lot of respect, and you act in a way that's deserving of respect. You dress, you get up in the morning, you say, and what can I wear today that my wife is going to respect me more? And for myself, wife's very upset when I wear non-iron shirts. When I went out with her, I remember I used to wear non-iron. I think that's why she married me. Because she kept saying, I got to iron that guy's shirts. Remember Shaloni? Shaloni and I were very close when we were younger. So he would, before his dates, he would always like iron his shirts and everything would be mechubad. But with me, it's just like, you know, why should I spend time on it? So, but now I realize that I ended up getting married a few years before him. Like, his shirts were always ironed, and he was always well taken care of and put together. So the girl said, he's all taken care of, he doesn't need me. But when the girl went out with me, and she sees, you know, my pants are dirty, and my shirt is wrinkled, she said, that guy, he needs me. So she married me. In any event, but you dress in a way. What is going to be a way that your wife is going to say, and you go to shul in the morning, and you get up early. Women like that. Women like a guy who's out of bed at 5:30 in the morning. He's out of bed at 5:30 in the morning. He's off the shul. He lifts his weights, and she's proud, and he goes to work, and then he earns a good living. People, they like that. That's attractive. That's not attractive to me. I don't say, oh, wow, I really want to date that guy. You know what I mean? He gets up early in the morning. You know what I mean? That doesn't really do it for me. But for a girl, that's what does it. They want to respect a guy who's in charge of his life, who's in charge of his emotions, who knows, you know, who's not this wimpy guy. You know, we all have our insecurities. That's not attractive. You know, when she sees, oh, you're an insecure guy and this and that, that's usually not what she's looking for. She wants to respect you to know that you feel good about yourself. So this is, it all comes from the inside. So A, it's respecting her, and B, it's building yourself up inside that she can respect you. And that pertains to the actions that you do, and the way you speak, and the type of friends you have, etc., etc. So anyway, guys, this is covered, and we should all be zochem yirtzeh Hashem to live lives, ezu mechubad ha-mechabed esabrios, to be mechabed others, to be mechubad ourselves. And in that schus, we, our tzelen elokim will shine forth and will be men of honor. 2, 3, 4.